You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thord,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm super excited to have Michael Elias on the show with me today. He has a phenomenal new novel. It's called You Can Go Home Now, and this needs to be in your summer to be read pile. This is an amazing book. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
I'm excited to have you, Michael. We begin each show with the same question, and that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
I think storyteller is, I came back from school, probably elementary school, I hope, and said, can I tell you what happened to me today? And told the story. And I must have gotten a parental approval and maybe a laugh. And I said, I like doing this. And I've been telling stories ever since. That was the first telling of writing. Probably, I would say, junior high school, I started having ideas for short stories. But I must say that the idea of actually becoming a writer did not occur to me, or something I would take seriously. Wow, I could do this, or I could be a writer. I think that happened later on. And I would even say I had a long career in Hollywood as a writer, but in a lot of ways, it was my day job. And I collaborated and had writing partners, which made it easy. I didn't have to do it myself. And at some point in my television or film career, I realized I wanted to do it myself. I wanted to write my own, really my own stories. And I would work during the day as a TV writer or a screenwriter with, as I said, whether it was Steve Martin or Rich Eustace or Carl Reiner. But at night, I would write my own material, my own stuff. So it's a funny kind of position to be earning a living as a writer, but not yet being a writer.
I completely understand that sentiment. Michael, you talked about your long history in Hollywood, but you grew up very far from Hollywood, didn't you?
I did. I grew up in a tiny town in the Catskill Mountains, population 1,500. But we were, it was entirely provincial. It was rural, and my father was a local doctor, GP. My mother was a librarian in a school. But we were 2 hours from New York, and we went to New York a lot. And my father, we would take us to art galleries. We would go to Broadway shows. We would see foreign films. So I had a very I had a combination of a small town life and exposure to the culture of New York City. So.
Which is fascinating. One thing that I love to think about and to ask people about is this idea of place affecting the kinds of stories that we tell. And, you know, growing up in New York State, outside the city, and as you described it, a very provincial type of upbringing, but being so close to the epitome of metropolitan life. How do you feel like that place where you grew up and had your formative experiences affected you as a storyteller down the road?
Good question. I would say that I learned that everyone has stories and people have stories, and it's not necessarily professional storytellers. I love to hang out in a local coffee shop and listen to people talking, whether bus driver or the school bus driver. I grew up in a prison town also, so there was a lot of prison lore, state prison and gas stations, and I just it enriched my life in so many ways that I learned to use it. I stole it. I hoarded it. I put it in my memory of these wonderful characters. It was rich. And so I had that, and then I could go to New York and, you know, get all the rest, the fancy stuff. But and I had a very diverse, as I said, very diverse bunch of friends, and farmers' kids, prison guards' kids, local store owners' kids. And then also, because it was the Catskill Mountains, the hotels, which was a destination for New Yorkers in the summer, all of a sudden in the summer, the whole atmosphere changed. And we had all these New York kids and kids from Brooklyn coming up with their families. And it was very exciting. And we all worked in the hotels over the summer and vacations. It was good for writing.
How does a kid from the Catskills make the trip out to Hollywood? What prompted that? In the 1960s, what was the draw for a kid from clear across the country?
I was summoned. I will say that part of my career, I mean, I started as an actor after college, and then I shifted into improvisational comedy, and with a friend created a comedy team, and we had a modest success. We opened for rock and roll groups and the Turtles, and toured and did nightclubs. But we also made it to the Carson show, Johnny Carson. We didn't make it to the panel, but we did four or five. And at one point, a producer from Hollywood called and said, "Who writes your material?" And we said, "We do." He said, "Well, I like it. Would you like to come to Hollywood and be comedy writers on my next show?" That was the summons, and we said, "We'll be right there." And so we said, "What about the act?" He says, "I'm afraid I'm not interested." So we became writers, and that was the beginning. We started off writing little variety shows, and then we went to the big variety shows: Glenn Campbell, Smothers, Leslie Uggams, and at the same time, we did sitcoms and eventually had an idea for a movie. But at the same time, it was, I as I said, I always knew I wanted to have a part of me that told my own stories that came out of my life, not Glenn's or Cosby's or Dick Van Dyke's. I wanted them to be my own. And that's where I ended up, I could say. My first alone thing was a play, autobiographical, about growing up in the Catskills and working in a hotel, and then the novels, and then I was my television and film career seemed to be kind of over. It was, I suppose, it was a friendly divorce, and I was. But happily writing my novels.
Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? Quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by Pro Writing Aid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. And it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan, you'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code Hank when you sign up. Noveler, N-O-V-L-R. That's Noveler.org. You mentioned earlier that there was sort of a divide between your day job and your heart's desire to do the writing that you wanted to do. Can you look at that body of work, your day job, we'll just call it that, body of work versus your personal body of work, and are they different? Your day job work seems to be more comedy based in a lot of cases. You famously wrote The Jerk. You worked on a show that I was very familiar with as a late teenager, the head of the class. There was a lot of comedy in your day job writing. Is there a separation there for you?
Yes and no. The comedy that I was doing my day job, which a lot of it I'm very proud of. I'm proud of Head of the Class. I'm proud of The Jerk.
It was a lot of cutting edge stuff that you did in that.
Yeah, I think it allowed me and Rich to. It was actually a political show too. I mean, there was characters. They talked about politics, and it was during the Reagan administration. And I still have a collection of letters, by the way, from Brent Rozelle and others complaining about making fun of Ronald Reagan and Oliver North, and taking the side of unions and so forth. So that was good. But there's a part that you have to write by yourself. Because you can't, I don't think you can write a nightmare or really personal stuff in a room with somebody else. You have to, I think it's your own. And there's something else that, and I think it was, oh my gosh, I can't, who said, and his name will come to me, if you're a Hollywood writer, you have to keep a part of you that you own, that's yours. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be a play. It can be a poem. It can be a novel. But whatever it is, you should be doing something that nobody owns. Nobody can tell you what to do. Nobody can change it while you're, you know, as you write it. And that will keep your sanity in a way, and keep you connected to the maybe. And this is relates to your question about comedy versus drama, and that will keep you connected to your darker self, which could also contain comedy. I believe that, you know, we all have humor in us. We all laugh. We all find things that are funny. You got to be, you know, crazy not to. And when I was writing television and things like that, you know, The Jerk, we were selling and writing comedy, really, you know, trying to make you laugh as often as we could. And if we could make you cry a little bit, that would be good too. But when you write, say, if I'm writing my own stuff, really my own stuff, it is going to allow me to project that, maybe that darker part. And I'm not I'm not starting out with the basic premise of let me make you laugh. I think there's humor in my books, for sure. There's some funny stuff in You Can Go Home Now, as dark as it is, because what would life, real life, be like without humor? So that's that. It's I hope that answers your question. I'm sorry I can't remember who's. Oh, I know. I wanted to say one other thing. That is, when you're writing in Hollywood, you don't own it when you finish it. If it's, you sell it, they own it. They can do what they want with it. You know, you could sell a screenplay and they could say, you know, we're turning it into a cartoon. So right. When you, and when you write a novel or a play or a poem, you have the ability to say no if you want it published. But I have had times, you know, we all talk about notes, you know, network notes, producer's notes, director's notes. You sell a screenplay, the first thing that could happen is you could get fired because the director wants to either rewrite it or bring him his own writers. So that's different when you do the other, when you write a novel. And that's the part that we have to, you know, we like.
I'll just say this one last thing about the idea of comedy versus drama. When I was reading You Can Go Home Now, there are definite moments of dark humor in this book, and ones that make you kind of go, oh, wow. That's, you know, it's really satisfying in a lot of ways. And, you know, one thing that I think a lot of younger thriller writers will do is they want to keep the tension ratcheted up, you know, to 100 through the whole novel, and you're just wrung out by the end of it. You know, you're just like, oh my God, you know, there's no room to breathe inside a manuscript like that. And, an intelligent writer will know that the audience, the reader needs these moments where the tension ratchets up. And then we need to ease off of it. We need to give them a chance to ponder what's going on. We need to give them a chance to laugh if they can, so that when the next moment of tension comes, it's more impactful. And I really appreciated that about this book.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did. Yeah. It's on purpose.
The idea of writing in a writer's room, or, you know, with a writing partner, or, you know, whatever that collaboration looks like, versus writing a novel, you're absolutely right. When you're writing a novel, you are in complete control and not a member of a troupe, or, you know, a group, or whatever. Is that creative process completely different for you when you are the master of this universe?
Well, yes. I don't have to, you know, in the room, I don't have to answer to anybody by myself. And that's great. And it's also harder. But when I'm finished, or sometimes even, I would say when I'm finished, I give it to people to read, and I ask for help, and I ask for criticism. Especially with this novel, where I wrote it in the voice of a woman, I made sure a lot of women read it before I submitted it or stamped finish on the cover, and I got beat up a few times, and I'm grateful because I wanted to get it right. And I hope I did, and but it was really useful. And then also in my process, once it was finished, I also hired professional editor to read it and give me notes. And then when it was accepted for publication, I worked with an editor, Sarah Nelson at HarperCollins, who also helped me a lot and gave me great suggestions. But always saying, it's your book. It's your book. These are not These are not orders. These are suggestions to make it better. And I would say, most of the time, she was right. And I would try them. And there's a wonderful story about, and I think this applies to writing in a room, too. There's a story about the Juilliard string quartet, where if somebody had a suggestion, they never discussed it. They just did it. Somebody said, we should play this a little faster. They said, okay, let's try it. And then they discussed it. They never said, I think we should play this faster. And nobody said, well, I don't think that's a good idea. They just did it. So that's a really, I thought that was really made a lot of sense. And I try to think about things and, if I get suggestions and try them, then I can really know whether it works or not.
World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world settings safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world-building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career, selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 800,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert and I know you will be too.
Right.
Michael, having 1 foot over in screenwriting and 1 foot over in novel writing, you have the benefit of seeing how the audience for these different art forms responds to things. And I think we've all watched television or movies from the 1960s or 70s. And as compared to how we tell stories in that medium now, there are certain things that are different. We would never begin a show the way that we do now, the way they did then. Now, by the same token, if we look at a classic like Lord of the Rings in the fantasy genre, there's nearly 100 pages before anything happens in that book, and we would never tell a fantasy author to begin a novel in the same way that Tolkien did, even though that novel's a classic and we all go back to it. Do you notice things about novel writing in the same way that I'm sure you'd notice about screenwriting, where the audience has changed, therefore the writer needs to change with them?
Well, I think there's maybe there's more of an obligation now in fiction, thrillers, and so forth to give the hero or heroine a darker past, and they're more fallible, I think. I think there's probably more violence. I don't know. I think you're certainly right about movies and how television, a series of affected movies, or at least the idea And when I started watching, going back and watching movies instead of series. And the interesting thing was they ended. They were
right.
Over, right? And you say, wow, okay. It wasn't lying and, you know, being in bed with my wife and saying, well, you want to watch one? Should we watch one more episode? Okay. And the next thing you know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. And and I think the idea that we watch completed movies as opposed to watching things that can go on and on. I mean, now, do I want to watch year three or four? I can't tell of Ozark. I certainly love the first season. I like them. Do I really want to be with them for 3 years, 4 years, or whatever? So I have to say that I found a lot of pleasure in reading, in watching movies. On the other hand, I do like to say, like everybody, oh my gosh, there's a new Donald Leon. I'm looking forward to it. There's a new, what's his name? The guy who does Detective Montalbano. I love Italian. I love Italian crime novels. But on the other hand, I don't want to watch 4 years of Sacro, the Italian television show about the criminals. It's a weird, maybe because, you know, Donald Leon writes one a year or 18 months. So, oh my God, there's a new one. And I can't remember the last one, but okay, what's she up to now? And the same way with John Grisham. And I'm glad that, can you imagine if Jack Reacher was able to produce a novel every week? would we read them? I don't know. So anyway,
if we had a new Reacher novel every week, our adrenal glands would probably be shot.
I know. You know, there wouldn't be anybody left to beat up anymore.
Right.
Well, I'd beat up the last bad person in the world or America.
So your new book, You Can Go Home Now, we meet Nina Kareem. Where did she come from for you?
Yeah, she came out of me. She came out of upstate New York where I live, and she lives in a small town where her father is a doctor, and he works for Planned Parenthood, and he's assassinated by a right-to-life fanatic. And to better find him, she gives up a career. She's 17 at the time, but she gives up her dream to be an academic study English or literature and becomes a cop. And she becomes a cop so she can find him, has a better shot at finding this guy who killed her father. She's bent on revenge. At the same time, she's also a pretty good cop. She's a good homicide detective, and she's investigating cases, and she gets a pile of cold case murders, and she notices or discovers that four of them, these men who have been murdered, their widows have the same alibi. They were in a battered women's shelter at the time that these men were killed, and she has to investigate that. So I've told you, I guess, the plot of the novel.
I'm always fascinated, Michael, by the beginnings of things, and a lot of writers get asked the question, where do your ideas come from? And that's kind of a lame question to ask, because ideas are everywhere. You only need to open your ears or eyes. But there's something about that golden idea that kind of rises above the rest, and you kind of look closer at it and go, maybe there's something there. What is that first kernel of an idea that comes to you when you're beginning a novel specifically, or if you want to talk about any other forms, that's fine. But is it a character that comes to you first? Did Nina Kareem show up, and then you needed something to put her in? Did the idea of someone who is motivated by their personal beliefs, and then that puts other people in harm? Kind of what was that first scenario that started unfolding that you knew that it was going to be a story behind it?
I think that takes us back to stories. And I think for me, it's always for me, it's a what if. And I went to Peru on a one of those treks, Machu Picchu, Inca Trail, all that stuff, and saw these beautiful ruins. And then heard stories about the lost city of the Incas. And then I said, what if there's a lost city of the Incas that's still alive? And what if it's kidnapping children and preparing to sacrifice them, and the city has gone wrong, and you need to find them and stop them and so forth? And I don't think that's a completely original idea, because we have King Solomon's Mines. We have, I have a friend who, Robert Silverberg, who's a big science fiction writer. And I said, I wrote a thing about a lost city of the Incas. And he said, oh, another lost city book. but it's okay, because it's better to be good than original. And I tried to make that my own. In this case, the what if, I don't want to say exactly what the what if is, but I think before there was a character, before there was even where I knew it would take place or any of that stuff, before there was Nina, there was the idea of what if there's a connection between men who are being murdered, who are abusive, dangerous, lethal men, husbands, lovers, partners, and a place that is protecting women. So I guess that's it. And then at the same time, this title popped into my head, You Can Go Home Now. And I thought, wow, who would say to somebody, you can go home now? And what sweet words they must be. So as opposed to growing up with Thomas Wolfe, who said, you can't go home again. Well, you can. So that was the process. I would say it's always the story first, a glimmer of the story first. And then how do you tell that story? Who tells it? Where is it told? When does it happen? Is it going to be, is it going to be science fiction? Is it going to be whatever? And is it going to be funny? So all of that comes into, I think that's my process, if it is a process. But I mean, it's only based on, I'm writing another one, and there is another what if, but I won't say that yet. Okay.
Michael, is it fun for you, or maybe a challenge, to take what might seem on the surface as disparate elements, a safe place for women versus men who are being murdered, you can go home now versus, you can never go back home, and then weaving those things that seem to be disparate into, a cohesive story? Is that a personal challenge to you, or do you look for things like that that you can then kind of riff off of as you're writing?
Yes, because first of all, it is fun in the sense that you're solving problems. And if you can solve a problem and if you can find a solution, that's very satisfying. What writers do is, and what makes writing alone so hard, is you have to create a problem and then solve it, and solve it elegantly, and solve it to the satisfaction of your reader or your audience. And the problems are very simple sometimes. How do two people meet? What attracts them? So forth. Anyway, that's the job, and it's I confess it is kind of fun. Did I answer your question? I think
yes.
I may have lost you a little bit.
that's good. Michael, over your 50-year career or so, has your writing process changed? Do you still attack the beginnings of stories the same way? Have you found things that have streamlined the process, or is it always a challenge with a blank page when you begin?
Yeah, blank pages are hard. I think, well, let me see. I think I like to start with a discovery of something. My novel, The Last Conquistador, starts with the discovery of an Inca mummy that's 500 years old by an expedition. And then they find another one. They dig it up and they unwrap it. And it's 5 days old. It's recently sacrificed. So I like to start with a whoa. That's pretty good. And I guess You Can Go Home Now starts with a detective getting three cases at once on her desk. One is a missing person. One is a man who confesses to a murder, only he doesn't remember who he murdered. And the third is a request to find somebody's missing cat because she's a detective. So I think that's a good way into it. I don't know how that occurred to me, except because I use stuff from other stuff. I steal from myself all the time. I had the idea of writing a movie about a man who confesses to a murder and he doesn't know who he killed. But somehow, and I never did it, but I sort of outlined it a little bit, but I never did it. But then when I'm writing You Can Go Home Now, I said, well, that would be an interesting case. I don't want it to be the whole book, but that would be an interesting case for my detective to deal with, my homicide detective, to help a guy find out who he killed. And then, of course, it turned out, well, I won't say how it turned out, but it became really useful. And then, let's see, I had a friend who was a television producer who hired a private detective. Can you get this? A private detective to find his kid's cat, missing cat. And it turned out that the kid hid the cat because he wanted his father to help him find the cat because they had never done anything together because this guy was a workaholic. And it was sad, right? But it came in and I could use it. Because the third case that she gets is a guy who calls her up and says, I want you to help find my kid's missing cat. You're a detective. So that's the idea of mining. That's how I write. I write by remembering things that are useful to what my story is.
Michael, you said that you are writing another novel now. Does Nina Kareem show up in the new novel?
No, this is a fresh one. But I'm also working on trying to figure out the next chapter in Nina's life. So I'm kind of doing them simultaneously. And that's – I have the beginnings of the next Nina chapter or novel, but I'm stuck. And I know it's going to come to me. And the minute it comes to me, I'm going to drop the other novel and finish the Nina novel. I guess she's my first love. But in the meantime, I'm doing this other one.
I love it. Michael, if we're going to put links to You Can Go Home Now in the show notes of this episode where everyone can find it easily. Do you have a place online where people can connect with you if they want to dig into your storied career and all of the great stuff that you've gotten into?
Yeah, it's my website is michaelelias.writer.com. And it's a website glorifying me. And it will have, and I suppose I think it has a way to contact me. I'm happy to share that.
Excellent. We'll put links to that in the show notes as well. Michael, this has been so much fun chatting with you today. I'm recommending You Can Go Home Now to everyone this summer, and we hope to see it show up on everyone's bookshelf and in their to-be-read piles. Thank you so much for taking time to come on the show with me today.
I really enjoyed it. They were really, really terrific questions. Thank you very much. Really good. Really good.
Want to grow as a writer and take your writing to the next level? Give Pro Writing Aid a try. Pro Writing Aid is a grammar checker, style editor, and writing mentor in one package. Pro Writing Aid will never replace a human editor. Rather, it helps you self-edit to a deeper level so that when you send it off to an editor, they will be able to focus on the meat of your writing and not spend their time fixing basic writing issues. Pro Writing Aid is the only platform that offers world-class grammar and style checking, combined with more in-depth reports to help you strengthen your writing. Our unique combination of suggestions, articles, videos, and quizzes makes writing fun and interactive. Writing can be grammatically perfect, but still feel awkward and clumsy. Pro Writing Aid searches out elements like repetitiveness, vague wording, sentence length variation, over-dependence on adverbs, passive voice, overcomplicated sentence structures, and so much more. Nothing makes a writer lose credibility faster than spelling and grammar mistakes. Submit clean, error-free writing. Go to ProWritingAid.com and use code HANK20 for 20% off of Pro Writing Aid Premium. Pro Writing Aid. Check it out today.